Hello and welcome to the Microsoft Data Center vNext Preview, bringing Azure to your data center. Hopefully you've seen some of the key announcements made in the Ignite keynote around Windows Server, System Center, and the new Azure Stack. In this session, we're going to delve that little bit deeper into one specific area, storage. I'm Matt McSpirit, Technical Evangelist, and I'm pleased to be joined by Sid, who's a Group Manager in the Data Center Storage team. Now, Sid, what are some of the industry trends around storage and some of the challenges that our customers are facing out there?
Thank you, Matt, first of all. Let me just go to a slide to talk a little bit about some of the industry challenges around storage and the inflection points that we're seeing on storage. So one of the things happening is obviously public cloud scale services is influencing the design points of what's happening in private cloud as well. So specifically, if you see the inflection points around scale, you are seeing a lot of the Azure style scale out technologies coming to the private cloud, and being able to do that on standard volume hardware is some of the inflection points. Another thing is you will see a lot of storage software smarts on standard volume hardware as well. Inflection point is around data explosion. As we know, given analytics, Internet of Things, and unstructured data analytics and structured data analytics, the need for data is going more and more. And so obviously along with that is a need for lower cost storage, both on-prem and in the hybrid and public cloud as well. One more inflection point is around virtualization, driving the need for more scale, more mobility, more flexibility. And lastly, I would round that out with hyperscale out. So when you see most of the public cloud properties, like Azure being one of them, we see a need for adding a bunch of storage nodes and keep adding more storage as you need instant capacity and performance and demand. And a lot of the paradigm of scale out in the public cloud is coming to the on-premises data center as well.
Okay, so that's some of the key industry trends around storage and some of the challenges that people face, especially around data explosion and wanting to embrace low-cost storage. But how have we started this journey already in Windows Server 2012 R2? So what exists out there for people today? How have we started along that?
Yeah, so we embarked on the software-defined storage journey with Windows Server 2012, which we delivered in August of 2012. And then we made some of those investments point here around private cloud a year later in August 2013. So let me kind of walk you through the main concepts of software-defined storage. One of the main things we did was around providing reliable, resilient storage on standard volume hardware and standard drives. So we had a scenario called Storage Spaces, which you're probably familiar with. We announced that in 2012 R2. And along with Spaces, you can get a lot of the high-end storage capabilities like tiering, data deduplication, automatic detection and correction of latent bit rots with the new REFS file system. And then once you have this virtualized pool of storage on standard drives and SSDs, you can basically remote that storage to your compute cluster over the SMB protocol. So traditionally, before 2012, we had the SMB protocol only as a protocol to transfer information worker data between your client and servers. And with 2012, what we did was we used the protocol to be a Hyper-V compute cluster to a storage cluster interconnect. And so essentially what you got with this, with the scale-out file server using SMB and storage spaces behind that, you have this notion of the compute cluster with Hyper-V, and that compute cluster at large scale, like 64 nodes, has basically got scale-out storage behind it that is elastic, that is resilient, highly available, highly performant, and basically scales as you grow.
Okay, so we're essentially, to explain a little bit deeper, are we using external storage to the scale-out file server nodes in that case? Can you explain a little bit more architecturally about what those building blocks are and how they look?
Yeah, let me just go to a slide and show you a little bit about what that means. So if you see the graphic here, just to quickly explain this, before 2012 Windows Server, the world for the Hyper-V cluster was, behind the Hyper-V cluster, you had only, you know, support for SAN or NAS storage. Mm-hmm. So you would traditionally have your Hyper-V cluster connected with either fiber channel, through a fiber channel fabric, which means you had a fiber channel SAN, with a fiber channel storage array. You still have that, and a lot of our, you know, Hyper-V clusters run SAN storage, and we totally support that with a great SAN and NAS.
We'll talk a bit about storage and SAN in a few minutes.
Absolutely. What we did starting 2012 is behind that Hyper-V cluster, you could remote that storage over a SMB3 storage network. And basically what that means is your VHDs on your Hyper-V cluster are available on a highly fault-tolerant, resilient, continuously available SMB3 file shares. So if you're a server admin, you get the familiar semantics of a SMB3 file share, except the file share is much more resilient, tolerant, and available, and basically stores a lot of the application data. So we kind of took SMB and storage spaces behind it and made that really highly available for application data storage, in this case Hyper-V.
Right, and the disks are being presented through from essentially a raw disk shelf, a JBOD via SAS, industry standard SAS, through to those file server nodes, and all servers see all disks.
Correct.
Okay. So how is this evolving going forward then? Because that's a very powerful and scalable and enterprise-ready architecture that we talked about there, but still requires that external storage. So tell us a little bit about how things are changing going forward in the next release of the platform.
Absolutely. So one of the customer feedback we heard, and let me just take it to another slide here, was basically when we talked about 2012 Windows Server Storage, one of the customer feedback we heard is, hey, give me more flexible options in the sense that, you know, give me storage without the need to have a shared JBOD. And we kind of mulled that out and we kind of thought about, hey, what if we had to basically do something around, you know, shared nothing storage, where we just had basically, where we had this notion of shared nothing storage where, you know, talking to your scale out file server cluster, you just had a bunch of storage nodes, and there is no shared SAS fabric and JBODs behind that. And all it does is basically, we have the notion of storage spaces direct. What it does is it takes the disks in each of your servers, it creates a large pool, virtualized pool of storage, and presents that to the Hyper-V cluster through SMB.
Okay.
So essentially what we have done is really enabled new price points around being able to use just high volume, low cost, standard servers and use that to build out large pools of storage behind.
So just help me understand that a little bit more, in a little bit more detail then. So we're now taking a physical server, an x86 server, mm-hmm. we're populating it with multiple, ideally, mm-hmm. hard drives, physical hard drives. Mm-hmm. Those hard drives, can they be, are they exclusively have to be SAS or SSD, or how do you think about that, just generally?
Yeah. So one of the things was, in 2012, we would support SAS, and we kind of figured out that, hey, you know, there's also lower cost hard drives are on SATA, and not just hard drives, but also SSDs. So with storage spaces direct, what you could do is basically you can use SAS or SATA, SSDs are hard drives in each of these server nodes. And when you see the little arrows, and that's basically we are remoting the storage and virtualizing the storage using the SMB protocol with the high-speed SMB direct storage networking. So what it's really doing is, given the limitations of typically SATA fabrics, you're using SMB to really virtualize and give and present this elastic pool of virtualized storage to the Hyper-V cluster. And this also offers fine grain expansion. So in the sense that if you need more storage performance or storage capacity, you keep adding storage server nodes, basically, and you keep getting more capacity and performance as you want to scale more. So it gives you, you know, much more scale, much more finer grain expansion, and the ability to use SATA SSDs and HDDs, which is completely a different price point than SAS, and lets you unlock more potential from the hardware as well.
And helps you to reduce your costs overall.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, you mentioned, and on the slide, we talked a little bit about deployment modes. So we've talked about external with a JBOD, mm-hmm. connected via SAS to your storage nodes. You've mentioned now removing that JBOD, so no external storage and all the hard drives are within the file server nodes themselves.
Yep.
But in both of those examples, you've talked about keeping the Hyper-V layer, if you will, separated from the storage layer via SMB.
Yes.
What are our plans around blending those two together?
Yes, great question, Matt. So one of the things, if you see this particular picture, as you said, here, the deployment mode shown is disaggregated compute and storage. So you have a separate Hyper-V compute cluster layer and a separate scale-out file server layer. So what you could also do, what we call hyperconverge, and there's a lot of activity around the industry, you could co-locate the storage and compute on the same physical node. So you could run your Hyper-V and scale-out file server cluster on the same set of physical nodes. Now, when do you use disaggregated and when do you use hyperconverge? I think it really depends on, in terms of the workload and the type of scale you need. And we believe in we have a as you need very high scale. At sometimes we believe in some workloads, you will see the benefits of separating compute and storage so that you can elastically scale each of them independently of each other. So if you need more compute, you add more compute nodes. Mm-hmm. If you need storage, you add more storage nodes. But in certain types of scale or certain types of workload, it would behoove us to kind of merge together compute and storage.
Okay.
At the end of it, we offer a very flexible way to our customers and let them choose what they want.
Yep. Basically. And it can all be managed through System Center, which we'll talk
absolutely
about.
I mean, everything you see here in storage is absolutely, we can manage through SCVMM and SCOM as well.
And monitor through OpsMan. Cool. All right. So you mentioned earlier, you touched on tiering, and you mentioned deduplication as well. And they're two examples of key features of the storage platform mm-hmm. that really enable you to gain efficiencies and increase performance. Mm-hmm. Tell me about some of the other features and capabilities coming into the platform mm-hmm. that are really helping customers increase that level of efficiency even further and drive better performance and redundancy.
Yes, yes. So some of the things we did was around more resiliency. So I'll give you one example. So we did something around storage path resiliency. So today, basically, if a VM has no path to the storage, often what happens is the VM basically is not graceful about how it behaves. So going forward with the next release of Windows Server, what we're doing is figuring out when the VM has no path to storage, we gracefully checkpoint shut down the VM, and when the paths are available, we wait for a certain amount of time, and when the path is available again, we kind of unpause the VM and restart the VM. So that's like something around more resilient support to storage path failures. One other thing we are doing is around rolling upgrades for storage clusters. So one of the biggest pain points for our customers was, when you upgraded from one version of Windows to the next, and we are going on a faster cadence to release Windows Server, it was a pretty tough uplift. With starting with the next version of Windows Server, you can really rolling upgrade your storage cluster. What that means is basically you can have a mixed mode storage cluster. You can basically upgrade some of the nodes and do that in a cyclical fashion where you basically in your 8-node cluster, you can say, okay, you start with this node, and this node could be the vNext, and you can operate in a mixed mode cluster for a certain amount of time and then throw the big red switch and go to the next version mm-hmm. without bringing down your service. So it's really, a non-disruptive way to upgrade. Other things we have done a lot around, diagnosability at scale. So one of the things we understand is when you're increasing your scale-out paradigms, you obviously have more complexity, and being able to troubleshoot and diagnose hardware failures mm-hmm. And isolate and pinpoint hardware failures accurately. And so you have a reduced mean time to recovery. Those are critical things we did as well.
Okay. So we've had scenarios with service providers before where service providers have workloads for tenants mm-hmm. and they've given tenants access to a certain amount of capacity,
yeah.
and that tenant has run something in their particular virtual workload that started to consume more storage, perhaps IOPS-wise, than the service provider would like.
Yeah.
How are we enabling scenarios like that, and for the enterprises and all customers, mm-hmm. to better control and gain efficiency around the IOPS control to virtual machines? Tell us a bit about some of the new capabilities there.
Absolutely, yeah. So one of the things we we did in Windows Server vNext is around storage cores. So if I just step back a bit, we did start the CoS journey back in 2012, but we did that for a very limited set of scenarios. What we are doing is we are continuing the journey and really expanding the notion of storage cores. And this was predicated on a couple of feedbacks. Some of our customers told us basically, hey, you know what? If I have a rogue VM in my data center, there's no technical way for me to throttle the bandwidth for that VM. That VM could run amok in my data center and carve out a lot of capacity. And we also heard from service providers who said, you know what? I want to offer my customers different tiers of service, different tiers of SLAs. I mean, somebody who wants a certain level of, you know, platinum SLA, I want to be able to offer that. So what we are doing in Minnesota vNext is giving customers the flexibility and choice and being able to control and monitor storage performance. Essentially, what this means is at a VM level or even at a VHD level within the VM or a group of VMs, it's very flexible. You can set mins and maxes on your IOPS, basically. And the out-of-band policy controller figures out a way to ensure that, you know, that particular VM or that particular VHD or the group of VMs always is getting I/O within that min and max range. So it's a great tool for IT pros to basically, you know, define a quality of service and making sure, you know, in a large data center, you have a bunch of VMs basically which are in policy and can, you know, really, you know, it gives you the ability to control the total amount of IOPS in a data center.
And reduce the chance of that noisy neighbor scenario really causing too many problems.
Absolutely.
So back in 2012, Windows Server 2012, we introduced, from the Hyper-V side, being a Hyper-V guy, we introduced Hyper-V Replica as a way to replicate virtual machines from one place to another. Yep. And that was done at the virtual disk level from A to B. And that was enhanced in 2012 R2 with shorter replication times, down to every 30 seconds. Tell me about some of the amazing innovation that's gone into the next release of the platform that's not necessarily Hyper-V Replica related, but storage replication related. Tell me some about that.
Yes. So Hyper-V Replica was a great feature we introduced in 2012. It replicates, you know, VMs or groups of VMs with a certain set of RPO. It supports, you know, failover, failback. One of the things we also heard from some of our customers that one of the missing pieces in our overall software-defined storage story was the ability to synchronous replicate volumes. Not just storage spaces, volumes, but also any SAN volume or NAS volumes. So we looked at how we can provide this ability for customers to, you know, synchronously replicate, you know, volumes across sites, and being able to do that with zero data loss, essentially with an RPO of zero. This is where we are introducing this notion of this scenario called storage replica, where we are replicating volumes across. In this diagram, you see you have two clusters, a cluster at site one and a cluster at site two, and you're synchronously replicating the data. We also support other topologies, so what we call a stretch cluster, where you could have a complete cluster stretched across the river, essentially, and then each site has its own storage. So what this means from a workload perspective is you can really have, you know, zero data loss for your mission-critical workload. And what we are doing is kind of bringing a very high-end mission-critical BCDR value prop and feature and kind of, you know, making that available to a lot of our customer base.
Excellent.
And all it needs is less than 5 millisecond latency link for synchronous replication.
Wow.
So if you have a need to replicate a large amount of data synchronously, storage replica is a great choice for you. And it just it also works with the existing NAS and SAN volume and also with your Microsoft software-defined storage stack as well.
Excellent. Now, we touched on management a little bit earlier when we talked about our storage solution and how you deploy and manage it is very important. Tell us a little bit about how System Center plays a part in the overall storage solution, but specifically around for customers who've got an investment in SAN technology already, because there's a lot of them out there, there's a lot of IT pros and implementers out there who are managing storage on a daily basis. How can they utilize tools like System Center to manage that? What can they expect there?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things is, you know, we are offering enterprise cloud storage choices to our customers. I mean, when we talk about private cloud storage, you really have, you know, you can build your private clouds with your with our SAN partners and NAS partners, or you can build private cloud storage with your Microsoft SDS storage stack. And for SANs and NAS, we continue supporting that, testing that. I mean, there's a lot of activity. If you look at, you know, how we interop and test inside our labs, a large part of that is our SAN and NAS ecosystem. Some of those things we have done around SANs, around like extracting the maximum performance out of SANs with ODX and giving trim support, those continue. System Center has a great way of managing SANs, you know, through the SMIS standards, basically. And today, when you look at a SAN management from a System Center perspective, System Center is able to manage the traditional fiber channel and I2C SAN storage arrays, in addition to Microsoft SDS storage.
Mm-hmm. And there's also integration as well with the Site Recovery.
Absolutely. So with Microsoft Azure Site Recovery, you can basically, you know, manage your SAN replication. So if you're doing a SAN replication with your favorite SAN vendor, ASR will manage that SAN replication from site to site.
Through integration and, with System Center.
Yeah. Absolutely. And to kind of continue that journey, if you see outside of SAN also, ASR will also manage storage replication traffic, which is basically with the inbuilt inbox storage replica feature as well.
Nice. Excellent. Now, earlier on, you mentioned Azure as one of these influences on the data center configurations and solutions around storage. And you also mentioned hybrid storage. So tell me about some of the specific learnings we've made from Azure, from running that kind of scaled service and as it relates to storage, and how that's influencing what we've got on premises.
Yeah. So one of the things we are doing around Azure storage, we heard a lot of developers asking us, hey, if I'm writing to this Azure storage API, my favorite blobs and tables API in Azure, I want to be able to run that application on-premise well. Okay, so we're doing something around bringing Azure consistent storage to the private cloud. What that means is we are going to be supporting blobs and tables in your enterprise private cloud.
Excellent.
And that runs on your traditional, all the goodness of storage spaces and scale-out file server underneath. What it means is if I'm a developer and I write to my app with minimal configuration changes, I can run that same storage API in my private cloud. And that we believe is a very compelling, you know, and a unique differentiator that we're offering.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Wow. So that is for developers, but also for IT pros as well. That's an extremely important option around storage, but also another example of one of the many options that we offer.
Exactly. I mean, in addition to your, you know, file protocol support and block protocol support, we're also going to, you know, give object support as well. So you can support, you know, block, file, and object.
Wow. Okay, great. Now, sticking with Azure storage, as we've alluded to some of the influences there, tell me a little bit about StorSimple hybrid storage and some of the innovation that happens in that space in this next wave.
Absolutely. So before I talk about StorSimple, let me tell you a little bit about, you know, when we embark on this journey, Microsoft is the company which offers you a spectrum of choices. It gives you public cloud storage with Azure on one end of the spectrum. And then I talked about a bunch of features and scenarios around enterprise private clouds. Those could be hosted in your enterprise, or it could be hosted by a service provider as well. And then some customers have a need for both, basically, you know, and they're looking at how they can extract the maximum performance out of the data center. So there comes hybrid cloud storage, and StorSimple is the great example of hybrid cloud storage. So StorSimple essentially is an appliance which sits in your on-premises data center, and it basically works over I2C. It can attach to your existing file server or a Linux file server or a VMware server. It provides storage for all of these workloads, primary workloads, and it does something very important as well beyond, you know, the primary workloads. If it sees a lot of your cold and warm data, it basically tiers that to Azure. What this means for you as a customer is when you need more capacity, you don't need to purchase capacity tomorrow. You can defer a lot of your SAN and NAS purchases by unlocking capacity on-prem. And if you see a lot of, I mean, one of the stats was around 60% of the data is often cold. So you are really freeing up a lot of on-prem capacity. And at the same time, you have this device which can basically act as give you, you know, resilient elastic storage for your file shares, SQL Server, virtual machines, SharePoint, and data archives as well.
Okay.
And with the tiering to Azure, the automatic tiering is built in addition to tiering inside the box with different tiers between, you know, hard drives, SSDs, and memory-based tiers. You have a fourth tier with the Azure as well.
So a lot of flexibility for that.
A lot of flexibility
for people to utilize. And more recently, there's been innovation within Azure to help manage that store simple infrastructure more efficiently as well.
So there's absolutely
been a lot of work done there. So before we wrap up, I know that we're talking about futures of the technology in general, but what about the future of the future for Microsoft software-defined storage solutions? What are you thinking about as we go forward around storage? What's influencing you, and what are your directions?
Yeah. So one of the key themes you heard today was, you know, a lot of what we are doing in enterprise private cloud is Azure Cloud inspired. And we basically have the best of both worlds. I mean, a lot of the technologies we are doing for enterprise private cloud is being deployed in Azure. It means customers get to, our internal customers, Azure gets to test them out early, give us feedback. So you will see a lot of, you know, the public cloud cost and scale economics coming down to enterprise clouds. Now, let me just kind of peel the onion a bit on that. What you will continue to see is more scale, basically, you know, more fluid management, more self-healing, more automation on how you can manage storage capacity, more application-aware storage, if you will. Basically, you know, depending on what your app is, I mean, your storage will be able to understand the semantics of that app. It'll be able to, you know, understand and realize, take capability of a lot of the oncoming innovations and volume in the hardware space as well, in addition to the SSD and the hard drive innovations, looking at higher speed interconnects between servers. Looking at some of the non-volatile memory technologies coming as well. We are going to work very closely with a lot of our partners on making sure we kind of, you know, truly extricate as much hardware potential as we can and put that in, you know, smart storage software to really give a public cloud-like scale and cost economics to our customers.
Great. So that's a little insight into what the future holds beyond this future. Hopefully you've found that session useful. We spent a bit of time talking about some of the key storage innovations around spaces, around the Storage Spaces Direct and next generation architectures, as well as exploring some of the new hybrid capabilities around bringing Azure, blob storage, object storage on premises, and also what we've done around Store Simple. So there's been a lot of cool stuff. Hopefully you found it useful. Make sure you check out some of the other sessions as well around compute and networking and services and so on the site. And with that, I'll thank Sid for his time, and thanks for you for watching, and hopefully see you again. Thanks.